Welcome to the America Magazine podcast. America Magazine is the national Catholic weekly. Visit us online at www.americamagazine.org.
Hello and welcome to the America Magazine podcast for October 25th. This week we were joined by Jesuit scholastic Luke Hansen, who is a member of the group Witness Against Torture. Luke has an essay in the current issue about the call to love one's enemies and how he feels a desire to meet with former detainees of Guantanamo Bay. And actually, since this article was written, Luke has met with some former detainees, a Uyghur community which has been resettled in Bermuda. For more information on the Uyghurs, you can look at a New York Times article that we posted along with this podcast. I spoke to Luke Hansen by phone.
Luke, your article in the current issue, which is titled Guantanamo Pilgrimage, you talk about your desire to form some kind of relationship with some of these men who have been detained at Guantanamo Bay. Since you've written this article, you have actually had a chance to meet with people, men who were in Guantanamo. Maybe you can describe that that visit for us.
Sure. Yeah, thanks for interviewing me. I work with a group called Witness Against Torture, which is comprised mostly of Catholic workers on the East Coast in New York and Washington, D.C. And we've done a lot of advocacy for Guantanamo detainees since 2005. But we had never met, nobody from our organization has ever met any of these detainees. And a particular case that we were following was the case of the Uyghurs, who are from Western China. And let's see, 22 of them have been in Guantanamo over the past 8 years. So we've been doing advocacy for them for a number of years, but had never really been in relationship with them and have never had an opportunity to ask them, what would you like us to do on your behalf, or what would you like to see coming from our advocacy in the United States? So the intention of the pilgrimage to Bermuda to meet with these men was to simply be in relationship with them, to get to know them better, to give them a chance to get to know us and the work that our organization does in the U.S., and to ask them, you know, what gives you hope? What would you like to see us do? To learn about their families and what interests them. So going to Bermuda was to simply build that relationship with them. So we had an opportunity to do that. We asked them if they would be open to such a visit, and they were very welcoming and very excited for the opportunity to meet with us. So they welcomed us there, and we traveled there in July.
Okay, you were there in July, July 16th. Maybe you can describe in a little more detail what went on. How did this come about? How were you able to put in touch with these people?
Sure. Well, we had been in contact with a number of the lawyers who represented these Uyghur men who are now in different places like Palau and Switzerland and Albania. So it was actually one of the lawyers who works in Boston who put us in touch with these men. They actually encouraged me to contact their sort of spokesman via Facebook. So I sent him a Facebook message, and he responded to that, and then we had a couple of phone conversations, and that's how we set up the visit. And it made sense for us to try to do this around a weekend, because until recently, these men were working at a golf course in Bermuda, so they would work Monday through Friday, but they had an entire weekend open, so we arrived on a Friday evening and left on a Monday morning. And we really weren't sure what to expect, if we were just going to have a couple hours with them or if we were going to have most of the weekend. But as it turned out, they really made themselves available to us. We spent the entire weekend with them. We were able to share some meals with them, play soccer on the beach, go swimming in the ocean, spend some time at their apartment. We just did different things, and we had a lot of fun. But at other times, the conversation was pretty serious, and they did say a little bit about their experience at Guantanamo.
How much of that, obviously some of this may be private, but how much of that can you share in terms of the experience they had in Guantanamo?
Well, truthfully, I mean, a lot of the experience has already been shared, and it's been published in different places. So we didn't learn a lot of new information. What was different was to be with the people who were sharing this experience. It touches the heart in a more profound way to know who these men are and to kind of see the emotion with which they express themselves, especially when they talk about very difficult things like what it's like to miss their families, to have not seen their families for almost 10 years now, what it's like to be a prisoner, whether it would have been at Guantanamo or anywhere else, just how dehumanizing that entire experience is. So it wasn't so much the information that they were giving us, but it was more encountering a person who's really experienced a lot and whose faith has really strengthened them and carried them through the experience, and to listen to them to as they share that experience. These are all Muslim men. There are many million Uyghurs who live in Western China, and most of them are Muslim, and with these men it's no different, and they're very devout. We were really inspired by their faith. When we spent time with them, they would take breaks once in a while. They would pray 5 times a day. They would follow a number of the other rules of their religion. That was very important to them, and I know that they just finished their Ramadan fast in September, so they continued working at the golf course and doing that labor while they were fasting. And when we asked them, you know, what gave them hope and what really gave them the strength to endure so many years of unlawful detention, even though they had been cleared of wrongdoing from the very beginning, they talked about their faith in Allah and asking Allah for patience, and that being the strength in their life to get them through those very difficult times. So as religious men ourselves who traveled to Bermuda, you know, one of us is studying Christian ethics at in New York, and John is a Catholic youth minister, and I'm a Jesuit. We were coming at this from a faith perspective, so it was really important for us to hear their own faith experience and how important it is to them.
Now, you've shared this experience. You know, you sent out a press release. You've also talked a little bit about it with various media outlets. Has there been any kind of reaction, perhaps negative reaction, to your outreach to these former detainees?
I mean, we've received a lot of positive feedback. I mean, I found that when people hear the story about what some of these men have endured, what the situation of their arrest was, what their experience of unlawful detention for so many years was, even though they were told from the very beginning that you're not Al-Qaeda, you're not Taliban, you'll be released soon, but they waited and waited and waited for a third country to receive them. When people hear that story, they have compassion for these men and what they've endured. So I find that, you know, the people that we've talked to in this country, you know, find their story very compelling. They want to respond, or they want to be helpful in some way. We've only received very little negative reaction, and that would mostly be based in rumors about these men being associated with Al-Qaeda in some way that have never been substantiated in the courts. You know, even President Bush admitted that these men were not enemy combatants, and we cannot legally detain them. I mean, those rumors still exist, and they're out there, and some people respond out of that, but most people we talk to respond very positively to what we did.
Well, your piece America, which I mentioned earlier, talks a bit about the impulse you have to reach out, as you say, heeding the gospel command to love one's enemies. Maybe you can talk about how, you know, that gospel mandate translated into this specific course of action for you.
Sure. I wrote my master's thesis on some of the policy questions about Guantanamo, some of the legal questions around international law and indefinite detention and so on. And it's really important to, I think, understand the legal implications and to engage in, you know, legislative advocacy and so on. But I felt like there was something more that I was being asked to do, that we're being asked to do. The question that Jesus seems to bring up again and again in the Gospels is, what does love demand of his followers? And for us, love demanded that we be in relationship with these men, that we do more than just advocate for their interests in Washington, D.C. or wherever else, but that we get to know who they are, we allow them to get to know us. And we let our advocacy blossom from that relationship. For me, in this experience, love demanded encountering persons, to not objectify these men as victims or people who just simply need our help, but to get to know them and their complexity, to learn about their families and what hurts them, what inspires them, what their hopes are. That's what love demanded for me in this particular situation.
Well, you mentioned Witness Against Torture, which is the group that you traveled with. Maybe you could talk more about the other work that they do.
Sure. I mean, Witness Against Torture started in December 2005, when a number of them made a pilgrimage to Guantanamo. They had hoped to visit the prisoners, but they weren't able to pass through the final security line. So they simply held vigil outside the gates, and they fasted and they prayed for the men who were in Guantanamo. They were asking, how can we respond to some of the suffering that's resulted from our country's response to terrorism? And because Jesus himself was a prisoner and Jesus himself was tortured, they felt drawn to the men who were being imprisoned at Guantanamo. So that's how they focused their work. And that's expanded over the years because, as you know, almost 800 men are being held at Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan. Indefinite detention is a policy that Obama continues to implement in different parts of the world and holding terrorism suspects. So the focus of Witness Against Torture has remained on these prisoners who are being held as suspected terrorists, their dignity, their rights, their stories, their families. But it's expanded beyond Guantanamo to other places like Bagram and some of the secret detention facilities that the CIA operates.
Yes, your article goes into a little detail about the Obama's administration's policies on this issue, and that is one of the interesting points you raise, that in fact there has not been a lot of change from the Bush administration's policies, even though Obama pledged to close Guantanamo Bay. Why do you think that is? Is there just a lot of pressure to enforce this law and order approach to terrorism?
Yeah, I think there has been a lot of pressure on the Obama administration. I mean, unfortunately, it's not a law and order approach because, I mean, there's established international law that could guide U.S. detention policies, but we simply haven't followed it. We're accusing hundreds of men of wrongdoing, either fighting illegally in a war zone or, you know, conspiring to commit a terrorist act or something. So we're accusing them of illegal acts, but we're not willing to take them to trial, to actually have to present evidence in front of an independent court to determine this person's guilt. We're holding people under a different set of rules that we came up with on our own. And it's been really disappointing because Obama has substantially maintained that same legal framework for detaining people. His solution was to simply move the prisoners from Guantanamo to possibly Thompson Correctional Center in Illinois. But while not changing any of the policies, they could still be held. He called it prolonged detention. They could be held without any sort of charges or trial for as long as the Obama administration felt that these men were a threat to U.S. national security. For Witness Against Torture, that's never been good enough. It's not enough to just simply change the location, but we have to look at whether we're holding these men in accordance with international law and international human rights.
Well, this visit, as you said, you were hopeful that after having this one-on-one encounter with some of these former detainees, that it would blossom into something later. You know, we're still a few months removed. What's come of it? You know, what is your hope following this visit?
Well, in some ways, it's given more direction to our organization, Witness Against Torture, as to how we're advocating for these men and how we continue to tell the stories of men who have been at Guantanamo and Bagram. Like, Witness Against Torture is participating in a campaign now where people are able to write letters to prisoners, people are able to look up their stories to learn about their families. And we're going to continue advocating for the release of the remaining Uyghurs who are in Guantanamo. There are still five Uyghurs who have been detained there since 2002. At the same time, I mean, it's been difficult for John, Jeremy, and I, who visited Bermuda. Like, none of us are able to do this work full-time with Witness Against Torture, so we've all returned to our jobs, to our communities, and we're trying to find small ways to kind of tell their story and to do whatever advocacy we can, but it's been difficult. So hopefully we'll have different opportunities in the next few months to put something together to do a little bit more for these men than we have been.
Finally, Luke, you were here one summer on the staff at America, and now you're out at the Red Cloud, the Pine Ridge Indian Reservation in South Dakota. Maybe you could talk just briefly about what your work is there.
Sure. I'm the volunteer coordinator for the Red Cloud School System, which is a school system sponsored by the Jesuits, run by the Jesuits and the Lakota people together, that really tries to build up and support the Lakota identity of the people and their Catholic identity as well. We have a number of volunteers who are recently graduated from college who come from different parts of the country, and they teach here for 1 year, 2 years, or up to 3 years. So my main responsibility is finding those volunteers and then supporting them and encouraging them, their spiritual growth, their professional development, while they work here at Red Cloud.
Well, we want to thank you again for joining us and wish you luck with your work both with Witness Against Torture but also at the Pine Ridge Reservation. Thanks again, Luke.
Thank you, Tim.
We want to thank you for joining us for this week's edition of the American Magazine Podcast. Look online where we have a couple of culture pieces, including a review of Waiting for Superman, the new documentary about charter schools from Father Ray Schroth. We also have a Q&A with the author Melanie Thernstrom about her new book, The Pain Chronicles. Reminder that to respond to our podcast, you can simply go to americanmagazine.podbean.com. This is Tim Reedy for American Magazine.